Canucks Central Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? If you want to be a part of the program, of course you can. If you are listening live, you can text in with your comments or questions. I was going to say comments, like a mixture of questions and comments.
Comments. That's a new one.
All right. Send in your comments to 650-650 at the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox.
Share your commentary.
Share your commentary at 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, the Bridge Street. Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at dunbarlumber.com. We've got Brad Richardson joining us. Of course, finished his career with the Vancouver Canucks as part of the end of the Bruce There It Is run for Vancouver, and is now joined up with the Missed and Curfew podcast. Of course, friend of the show, Shane O'Brien and Scotty Upshaw, a part of that. So we'll talk to Richie about his career and some things ongoing with him. But your Vancouver Canucks take on the Chicago Blackhawks today in a game where JT Miller is probable, not
Stop.
Questionable.
Okay, enough, maybe enough. It was funny for the first bit.
You ruined it, Rage. You ruined it.
Yes.
So JT Miller is a game time decision, I guess, officially.
Yes, game time decision. We'll see if JT plays, and it seems to be one of those things that is not going to be long term, but clearly it's something that may need a game off, you know, and the Canucks have a nice break till Saturday.
Mm-hmm. So do you just hold him out and let him rest? Hopefully he's closer to 100% by Saturday.
That's a week off between games, right?
Yeah. Wouldn't be the worst thing. We'll see. JT did take part of the optional morning skate, which was well attended this morning in Chicago. We'll get more into the pregame when the official pregame show starts at 4 o'clock. But let's hit it. It's the Open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to the Open.
Oh, that's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me.
Yeah, it's the Open where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And, you know, I guess we were wondering, Sat, who was going to level up for the Vancouver Canucks this year. And obviously, you know, names like Atu Ratu, we've seen Arshdeep Bains, and, you know, could these guys make the jump from AHL regulars to NHL regulars and play a role for this team as they try to get a little bit further than just the second round from last year? But obviously, Nils Höglander was part of that. Had the 24 goals last year, but could he be more relied upon than he was last year, where in total after 80 games played 1206 per night, and early this season we've seen that number jump over 15 minutes per night as he's been paired up with Connor Garland, and they've kind of been seen as the fix it line, like you're gonna go where we need you to impact or carry along somebody with you.
Yeah, the fix it line, hey?
Yeah.
It's like, what was that show, Ray Donovan? Yeah. The Ray Donovan line? Just a lot shorter.
You know what? Actually, like, they could be called, there's that new Apple TV movie with George Clooney and Brad Pitt.
Oh, The Wolves? The Wolves, yeah.
Where they're like kind of like, I guess, loosely based on the wolf from Pulp Fiction, right? So
They're the Wolves?
Maybe they are the Wolves.
The Wolves. I don't know if that's going to catch on, to be honest.
No?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Garland and Höglander, the Wolves.
I get it, but I don't think it's going to catch on. Like, no. I think it's clever and good, but I just don't I just don't think it's going to catch on. Neither is anything that I'm going to be saying here about a nickname for these guys, right? But
Not everybody can be as creative as me. It's fine. No.
Not everybody gets art, okay?
Grobbable.
Quamentary. It's high art, very high art.
All right. Sorry.
Only a true artist could appreciate what happens on this show. But he's playing, you're right, he's playing 15 minutes a game.
Yeah.
It's only five games in, but that's notable.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a guy like Jake DeBrusk, who we'll talk more about in pregame too. Is he going to play on the first unit or not? So DeBrusk hasn't really dominated. And I think part of, and I'm not saying they're giving his minutes to Höglander, but there has been enough there for Hoglander to not get these minutes. Sprong was a new addition. You might want to try different things. But I do think he's legitimately earned everything he's gotten so far this year. And when I watch him on the ice, and it's only anecdotal, it's only five games in, but I'm not noticing as many mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think when you watch him as far as his off-the-puck play, it is a lot more steady. Like, every once in a while, sure, I mean, nobody's played perfect, right, of course, and he had a couple bad penalties at one point, but those things are going to happen. But I see a player who's far more in tune with what the coaches want out of him, and his line changes are on point. He's been really good at closing down space on players and not getting lost in the defensive zone, and those are things that I wasn't quite sure that Hoglander was going to grasp, to be honest with you.
Here's what Rick Tocchet had to say after the morning skate when asked about Nils Hoglander.
It's a good benchmark for Hoggy where to go, because if you look at Garland, when I had him in Arizona, he was a point guy. Really, he was just an individual guy that just did his own thing, and he wanted to be coached and be a complete player. So he keeps reminding me, he got, I don't know, somebody voted for him for the Selke. I think he was like fifth place or something, or he got a fifth place vote or something. And but I will tell you, like, I have no problem playing the last minute of a game with an empty net. Like, that's how far Garland's gone. And I think that he's a benchmark for Hoggy. Where can Hoggy be in a position with 3 minutes left? There's a draw on our end. Can I leave him out there for the draw, knowing he's going to do the right thing? Is he there yet? Maybe not right there, but he's definitely a lot closer than he was last year. And I think Garland's a perfect example how he took his game to his identity to a different, where he's a... I'll be honest, he's been a really good defensively this year too, as much as he's driving play.
So there is Rick Tocchet when asked about Hoglander, and obviously Garland a big part of that conversation, but sees Garland's progression as something Nils Hoglander can strive to and continue to develop towards.
Yeah, and you know, he was asked, it was Dranser asking him about Garland being somebody that perhaps, you know, Hoglander can look towards. And there are similarities. We had this conversation recently as well about which players are similar to Connor Garland. He's a bit of a unicorn, as you mentioned. And there are similar traits between Hoglander and Connor Garland. And especially being smaller players, there's a certain way you have to play to be successful. It's not just about, of course, you got to win puck battles, you got to be able to come away with them, but also be able to be in the right spot positionally. But as far as all the dirty work stuff, Hoglander can do it. Like, none of us think Hoglander's a soft player.
Yeah.
So there's really a lot about, can he just think the game at a level and process it at a level that the coach can trust him? And I think he's showing it already. And I think we're also seeing, because of the increased minutes, he's getting more shots on goal. Mm-hmm. Like, right now, he has 8 shots so far through 5 games, which would put him on pace for over 130 shots on goal. And he's... based on the attempts he's had 15 so far, that would put him on pace for 240-odd-some shot attempts, which would also be a career high for him. He needs to shoot the puck a lot more, too. We wondered, is he going to be able to keep that shooting percentage at 20%? Well, it's at 25% right now, but it's only 2 goals. It's early in the season. But for one way for you to mitigate the shooting percentage coming down is getting more volume.
Yeah.
And he is showing, at least incrementally, that there is more volume. And I'm seeing a player that's really growing into being a top 6 talent right now.
He's so far, like, his play off the puck has really helped. You know, there's going to be moments over the course of the year, and certainly as you get into the later stages of the year, like, one of the things I look back on is, I guess, Evan Bouchard's goal in game 7, where Hoglander's just a little late to getting to the point and closing Bouchard down, so he has that extra time to get the shot off and find his spot to see the puck through Artur Shelov's. And yeah, of course, you know, you can make the argument like, hey, Shelov should have that, whatever. But, you know, it's those little things like, are you getting there? Are you closing that down? Are you making sure that shot doesn't get off from the point? And that's, you know, those are little moments where Hoglander can still be better in his defensive zone coverages. And so far this year, I haven't seen those types of mistakes.
No, absolutely. And as a coach mentioned, there's a reason why he's being trusted more. Now, you have to still do more.
Yeah.
But he's really on the progression. You know, I one of my quick questions about him have been that side of the game. And I've been critical of his game in the past. It's kind of similar with Garland at times too. But when a player is doing what he's supposed to do and he's having success, you can't deny the outcome. And I think Hoglander's getting to a point now, you really can't deny it. And there isn't anything outside of maybe a bias that would hold you against him. Because based on the rates and based on how he's playing right now, especially energy-wise and consistency-wise through five games, how many forwards have been better than him? We know Garland has been, perhaps. Yeah.
Probably Garland, maybe Besser's in that conversation.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the...
That's pretty much
it. It's kind of the number.
Yeah. I mean, JT's had some, you know, big moments.
Yeah.
Consistency game to game. I think Hoglander's brought it more. So I think the progression for him might be somewhat underrated at the moment. But if the coach trusts him more, and if DeBrusk is going to have a hard time, say, finishing, and he has success playing alongside Patterson, he just got a contract extension. Like, I think this team would love nothing more than Hoglander really seizing one of those top six spots long term, and this is a great start for him.
I do want to point out, I think it's hilarious that Garland reminds Rick Tocchet that he got votes for the Selke last year. And Garland's actually short selling himself because he didn't just get one fifth place vote. He got a third place vote and two fifth place votes. Shouts to Luke DeCock, who gave Connor Garland a third place vote for the Selke. Of course, Luke DeCock, the Raleigh News, Carolina Hurricanes beat reporter that thought Garland was worthy of being a Selke finalist last year. Then a couple of Vancouver writers gave him fifth place votes as well. So Gars is he's working the coach for more ice time and bigger spots. Maybe that's why we're seeing him on the penalty kill a little bit more lately, taking some of those on the fly shifts on the PK. You know, one of the interesting parts of that quote there from Tocchet, though, is he kind of, well, there was another moment where he talks about playing those two guys with Pedersen and then being sort of right now the fixers, the wolves, as I've coined them, and helping Pedersen get into gear and get his game going. But he said and mentioned, like, I don't know if they'll be a duo for all that much longer. And I wonder if that has to do with Dakota nearing return and ultimately, like, then what happens with Hoglander after that?
Well, I think Pedersen. He can play with Pedersen. And honestly, like, when we talk about where DeBrusk fits and how he looked even playing with JT and Besser, and again, we'll see with the game here tonight, but that could be a very natural spot.
Right.
There's an opportunity here for Hoglander to seize this, playing alongside Pedersen. Garland's only there for the time being. Mm-hmm. But can Pedersen and Hoglander really build some chemistry here?
Yeah.
And if that becomes your solution as a duo, then, I mean, you're really cooking. And so far, we haven't seen the Pedersen side of it. So I think what has me excited about Hoglander, and I want to see how it goes, not to get, you know, too ahead of ourselves, but we're seeing him have success and play the way he is, and Pedersen hasn't gotten going yet.
Yeah.
What happens if both get going?
Yeah, now you're talking about another layer of offense on this team.
Yeah, and that's something that I want to see, because if he can be the solution, again, like, you're talking about house money here. Even though he has $3 million on the cap, that would be a bargain for a player that's going to be playing at a legitimate top six level.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, maybe is there a world where they play Dakota and Garland where they play Joshua and Garland with Pedersen?
That could also happen. There's
and
no doubt.
Hoglander gets... Who knows where Hoglander ends up?
And as much as we're sitting here and talking about top six, so to speak, and right now Hoglander is averaging the fifth most 5-on-5 ice time, or even strength ice time on this team,
which you wouldn't have guessed
amongst forwards.
Certainly, 6 months ago or at the end of last season, you wouldn't have guessed.
Yes, fifth most even strength.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. You know, so he's playing second line minutes essentially, but he can he run his own line? And now you're. A real contender has three lines.
Yeah.
And that's where the Canucks had a lot of success last season when they had the Garland, Bluger, and Joshua trio going. And if you can recreate that again, and then Hoglander can do his own thing, and you have Pedersen going, and you get JT healthy, now you look like a real formidable offense, right?
Marcus in Gibson, Hoglander makes me forget about the Podkolzin pick that year. That's right. They were both drafted in 2019 here in Vancouver. Hoglander hitting big out of the second round. Podkolzin not so much as a 10th overall selection from that season, obviously now with the Edmonton Oilers. Carmichael saying Hoglander's nickname just has to be Nearly Nils. I like Wolves better.
You would.
Well, especially now that I've coined it. So that's the latest on Nils Hoglander. Quinn Hughes, he wins the Norris last year. He gets off. First couple of games, you're kind of like, okay, like Quinn's game hasn't yet really rounded into form.
Yeah.
And now kind of a different story through five games. The Canucks have won a couple, and Quinn has maybe been the best player in those two games, and he continues to get his shot off at a crazy rate. But now I'm looking at the Canucks numbers, the wowies, the with and without Quinn Hughes on the ice.
You didn't make that one up.
No, that one I didn't make up. No, yeah. That one's very much been
an actual thing.
A term for a very long time. The wowies, with or without Hughes. And
it's not a dating thing.
No, and it's also a U2 song, but that's not what I'm referring to. The wowies with Quinn Hughes. Canucks are controlling 64% of the shots of the with him on the ice. Mm. Without him, it's 42%.
Yeah, it's not as great. I mean, I think we've normalized how good Quinn Hughes is.
Yeah.
You know, we were kind of chatting, myself, you, and Canberra before the show, that, you know, Quinn just does stuff that we just kind of don't even bat an eye at.
Yes.
But then when you go and rewatch something and really take a moment, you're like, that was really sick. That was really cool, you know? And you just don't think about it because you see him do it almost every single shift, right? But, and I think his dominance is almost getting to that point. And I think the other side of it is, like, I think there's an acceptance that the Canucks need one more defenseman.
Yeah.
I think we're all in agreement that, they need to add a defenseman at some point here. The question is, when, and can you pull it off?
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday with Frank Saravalli, where there's still very much a question mark at the type of defenseman that's going to be available on the trade market, and just how high the caliber of defenseman is going to be available on the trade market. And we'll see how the season plays out. There's probably going to be a team or two that we're expecting to be playoff teams that don't end up in the playoff picture. And so maybe some players shake loose that way. But right now, you know, it's hard to wonder where that's going to happen or where that's going to come from. And you're kind of wondering, how are the Canucks going to make this work? Because right now, outside of Saturday's game against Philly, maybe that's a step in the right direction and continues going that way. But you're kind of wondering where the Canucks are going to get more of a push out of their decor.
You know, maybe later this week, because the Canucks don't play until Saturday after the game here, maybe we'll do something about, okay, what are some defensemen that we'd like to see the Canucks target and who could become available?
Yeah.
And we'll compile a list for you and we'll talk about it later this week. But that's going to be the big question. Who's going to become available and what type of player do you have to end up pursuing?
Yeah.
And what's the cost going to be? I think this organization, this front office, has not shown any hesitancy to pay a price to acquire one of the best players, if not the best player on the market.
Yeah.
It's just, is a player going to be available that they're going to be that convicted to get? Because ultimately, as much as they want to be better, they're also not going to make a trade for the sake of making a trade. And when I look around the situation, when I look around the league, I just don't see anything right now that makes any sense. So when it comes back to Quinn Hughes, it's like, we know how dominant Quinn Hughes is, but the help doesn't seem to be anywhere near arriving anytime soon.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to take some time for that picture to even develop at this stage. And can Quinn keep doing this? I mean, I know Yannick was on Canucks Talk today. And what did he say about Quinn Hughes utilizing him right now?
Yeah, basically just play him till the wheels come off.
Essentially, right?
Hopefully those wheels never come off.
I agree. And I understand what Yannick is getting at here. And we were having...
Play him as much as humanly possible.
And you made this point too earlier. You talked about how the best defensemen in the league play a lot of minutes. So you shouldn't be so shocked that Quinn Hughes is going to have a lot of games where that number is really high. That's what top defensemen do.
Well, and you're going to have games like Saturday where you're able to manage that a little bit better and play him less. And so Tocchet was, you know, very... And Adam Foote probably in together in concert basically said, like, hey, maybe we can tonight maybe we can back off his minutes a little bit. And they did, and it got dicey a little bit early in the third period, but they finally settled themselves and closed it out strong.
100%. Now the other thing that they've really needed is somebody else to be able to provide a bit of a push. Brännström's played two games. He's acquitted himself fairly well through those two games so far. How much does that alleviate things as far as making that need seem as big as it is right now? Because I think a lot of the questions around the blue line also were around the fact they lost the first three games of the season.
Yes.
So it became a bigger issue. And then Forsberg ends up going out of the lineup. But it's not like you need to find this solution for the playoffs today. And as much as I know a lot of fans love Brännström, and I hope he turns... Again, same argument for Hoglander. Why wouldn't you want the cheap in-house option to work out? That's like the dream scenario, right?
That's
like,
the perfect scenario.
I'd love to see it happen. I'm somewhat skeptical that he's going to be that guy come playoff time, but can he be that guy for the regular season? Can he be that guy until the playoffs? Because if he is, that you know what? Like for the regular season, that makes a big difference in terms of alleviating some of the puck-moving concerns. Come playoff time, you need to upgrade on that. But does that buy you some time, potentially?
Yeah, and it really showed, because I thought Desharnais had his best game of the season as well the other night, playing alongside Erik Brännström. So that's something to keep an eye on with the Vancouver Canucks as well. All right, let's get to the Canucks Central Roundup. As mentioned earlier, Dakota Joshua is nearing a return. Monday Insider here on Canucks Central, Frank Saravalli, saying today that... Dakota Joshua is on track to return in 1 to 2 weeks for the Canucks. Rick Tocchet mentioning it was a hump day for not Wednesday, but it's a hump day for Dakota Joshua, meaning he's taken taking a little bit more bumps and participating, even though he's in a non-contact jersey, getting I guess a little bit more in contact with his teammates.
Listen, you take a bump to overcome the hump, right? So, I mean, you know, he's...
People can take that a lot of different ways.
It is what it is. But it's notable he's taking some physical contact.
Yeah.
And how is he going to handle that physical contact? And he's going to play, and he's going to be fine as far as physically.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when is that going to be, right? Is it going to be a week? Is it going to be 2 weeks? There's no rush to get him into the lineup, but his return is imminent.
Yeah.
You know, like he is going to be returning very soon, it looks like.
He could very well be in full practice mode by later this week. Does he get in as early as Saturday? I would say unlikely, but... You know, there's a chance he plays by the end of the Canucks' three-game homestand that starts on Saturday.
Yeah, I would actually be a bit surprised if he doesn't play by the very end of that homestand at the end, at least the third game, perhaps. You know, and I don't think Saturday either.
Mm-hmm.
If you're taking contact today, but
well, they probably want to ease him in, and you know, he's not going to be fully game fit yet either, right?
If everything goes according to plan, he could play a week today.
Yeah.
I could see that kind of being the case.
Thatcher Demko, maybe not as close, but for the first time really since training camp, he was seen on the ice getting in work with the Canucks coaching staff after the Canucks optional skate. So as we've said a million times here with Thatcher Demko, probably early to mid-November is sort of the loose timeline that we've kind of been working with.
Yeah, it is what it looks like. Again, like I'm very hesitant to put a direct timeline on it. I think, you know, the hope had been sometime in November, and again, I don't think that has changed, but I don't think it's been, you know, an easy go of things. I think it's very clear that it has been a bit of a challenge, mm-hmm. even ever since he spoke to the media about, you know, what he's dealing with. But not to say that everything is going, quote unquote, according to plan, but I do think going into this, because of the uncertainty around it and because of the unknown and because of how many hurdles they still had to jump over, I don't think there was an assumption that it was going to be this, you know, linear path to get him getting back. Like, I do think it was expected that there would be some twists and turns as they figure it out, because again, it's uncharted territory. And when you're going through that, and I'm not saying, you know, all this is okay, but I'm not as concerned in terms of, like, I'm not shocked by him being on the ice, perhaps not being on the ice as much, then taking some time off to figure it out. Because one thing I keep going back to that we heard about this was he has to really strengthen a lot of areas and twitch muscles around that muscle, mm-hmm. because of the way that muscle is formed and where it is in your knee, that you can't really strengthen that muscle necessarily.
Yeah.
So you got to strengthen everything around it. That sounds complicated.
Yeah.
And that means you're not going to know what needs to be strengthened and how much until you challenge it and test it. So I think we're very much going through that type of process with Demko. So I'd be careful with setting a timeline on it. But, you know, it's going well enough that he's on the ice.
Yeah.
And they're not hiding from the fact that he's on the ice. And I think that's a positive.
All right. And we'll close out with this text from Bronco. Greetings from Serbia. Fellas, can you tell me if Miller is a go tonight, setting my fantasy hockey lineup? Thank you. Love listening to you over here. Well, we're glad that we are worldwide, all the way into Serbia. So shouts to Bronco.
Prestige worldwide, man.
That's it. And as Miller is a game time decision We can't give you a definitive answer. Tockett kind of mentioned probable, but we'll see what happens with Miller. We'll know for sure in an hour's time when warm-up starts.
I hate sitting on the fence, but I was told that this is a legitimate game-time decision.
Yeah.
You know, you may be shading it. Like, again, and, you know, you might shade it 60-40. He might play, but there's still a 40% chance he doesn't play if you're that optimistic.
I would imagine it would be the Canucks having to hold Miller off the ice, given the way that Miller is wired.
And hey, again, like I wonder if somebody's trying to make the argument to him that you can take a week off here.
Yeah.
And we'll see if JT takes it. You know, knowing JT is probably going to, again, someone has to force him off the ice, right?
JT has missed, over the last three seasons, four games. And one of those was for rest, which was at the end of last year. Yeah. So JT just doesn't miss very many hockey games, which is incredible considering the type of game that JT Miller plays. All right, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canucks Central. Upcoming, Brad Richardson, parts of three seasons with the Vancouver Canucks, and now a member of the Missing Curfew podcast. That's next on Canucks Central.